Welcome to Microdose Psychedelic Insights, powered by the Conscious Fund. This is the Psychedelic Insider Series, fireside chats with industry leaders in the psychedelic space.
Okay, we're here with Doug Drysdale, CEO of Cybin. How are you, Doug?
Hey, Jason. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Thanks for taking the time. So we've only got about half an hour. So how about we do a little summary of what Cybin's been up to? I guess I'll take a second to say congratulations, because you know, in the last 6 to 8 months, or even the last year, you guys have been like consistently in the news and putting out major announcements, and seems to be like you're driving things forward just about as good as anyone in the space. So good job. Take a chance to say that.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. You're right. We've made a lot of progress over the last year or so. And it's really been mostly about building the team and the kind of the ecosystem so that we can move our molecules forward. So that means building partnerships with CROs, with clinical units, getting the supply chains in place for our molecules, and filing IP. So it's been a pretty busy year or so.
Yeah, seems like it. And recently in the news with Deepak Chopra, Tony Robbins mentioned you. Now you get Jason from Microdose. It's been a great week for Cybin.
Trying to explain some of those things. We talk to a lot of people in the sector, and there's obviously a lot of awareness and education within this space around psychedelics, and lots of positive sentiment. But when we talk to folks outside of the sector, I get reminded, that not everyone is as familiar, nor are they as educated about psychedelics. So, for example, recently we were speaking to a scientist that also advises regulators, and his first reaction to psilocybin was that it was addictive and causes suicidality. Obviously,
I'm familiar with these talks.
So that's a concern when you're speaking to someone that has influence. And so part of the rationale for working with the Chopra Foundation is to get the message out more broadly. It's time to start doing that. That some of this education and destigmatization is not something we can start years from now once we have a product approved. It's a long, slow process. And so I think the Chopra Foundation is ideally positioned to help us with some of those things.
Yeah, definitely. Getting us to this next step where psychedelic medicines become an accepted therapy, it's kind of a multi-pronged approach, right? There's a drug development pipeline, and there's a legislative pipeline angle, and there's a de-stigma. That's definitely part of it. So it's great that you're working on that. I think we all are part of that work. Change the view of things.
Yeah, I agree. And it is going to take an awful lot of effort. When you've had decades of misinformation, that's quite a hurdle to overcome.
Yeah, definitely. And if the whole ecosystem can change, I mean, regulators are supposed to follow the science, but if the broader society is more acceptable to psychedelics, we're all human beings. It would probably help the process if society is better educated on the space in general. Probably help.
Yeah, and not along. Just. Yeah, absolutely, but not just society. Of course, you've got policymakers that could get in the way or make life difficult. You have payers, and institutions, healthcare institutions, that where they will need to adopt and understand these molecules. So they need educating as well. And those institutions are just made up of people. And if people have a misunderstanding, it can lead to unnecessary barriers.
Yeah, 100%. So maybe let's tick through your recent news. Something that I was not as educated on as I should be was your Embark program. Maybe fill me in on that.
Yeah, of course. I think all the evidence points to the fact that combining psychotherapy with psychedelics leads to better results. I think plenty of studies that lead us in that direction. As we think about approaching this from a pharmaceutical perspective and going through the approval process and clinical trials, we wanted to make sure that we had a psychotherapy program that was consistent, so that it was equally deployed as far as you can with psychotherapy, but so that it was reducing the psychotherapy as a variable in our clinical studies. So EMBARK was designed with that in mind. It's a trans-diagnostic model, so we'll be able to use it for multiple different indications. And it's a series of training modules that have been put together by a really amazing faculty. So we have run the first program with the University of Washington in Seattle. We did that at the end of last year. That study started enrolling in December. It's for healthcare providers facing clinical depression themselves, facing burnout. And we'll learn from that deployment of EMBARK, the training, the logistics of how you build it into studies. And we'll take that forward into our depression study for CYP3, our psilocybin analog, later this year.
All right. So is EMBARK its own clinical trial, or it's more of a study just for your own research?
Well, EMBARK is a psychotherapy program. We are using it in this clinical trial with the University of Washington. It's 30 healthcare providers in the study. So it's really a small pilot study for EMBARK. We'll also get some psilocybin data out of it. But for the most part, we're looking at how do we effectively deploy EMBARK. And I do think that between now and when we come to market, Cybin and several other psychedelics companies have to figure out how to best optimize that delivery of psychotherapy. How do we make it commercially viable? So this is one step in that direction.
Right. So that, thank you for that. That segues into, I guess, maybe CYB003 in terms of optimizing psilocybin. So this is, I was at the Wonderland press conference. We announced the results, and they seem to be really positive, so much so that it's kind of pushed it to the top of your development pipeline in terms of molecules. Just a small question on that. CYB001, no longer kind of a priority for you guys, focusing on 03?
Yeah, so from the outset, we've been working and thinking about ways in which we could optimize these psychedelics. They all come with their own challenges. And, you know, our lead program, CYB3 and 4, deal with psilocybin and DMT. Mm-hmm. And each of them has different challenges. And the different programs approach those issues in different ways. CYB1 was trying to approach the issue of the bioavailability and prodrug and all that stuff through the sublingual route. That's one way of doing it, as a formulation. It's quite an inefficient way of doing it, we found out. And in parallel, we were progressing CYB3, which was altering the molecule itself in a much more efficient way of tackling the challenges. And that quickly superseded our approach with CYB1. And also means that we could combine our depression and our alcohol use programs into one program, which of course is cost effective. Yeah. So CYB3 is an analog of psilocybin that we've deuterated. And essentially the benefits are about half the time in the clinic. So the onset of action is twice as fast. Yeah. And the duration of action is about half. But also the deuteration removes a lot of the interpatient variability that you see with psilocybin. Deuteration helps with a couple of things. In this case, it helps with metabolic stabilization. And that means that the outcomes, the responses of patients are likely to be more predictable. Whereas with traditional psilocybin, you might see patients have two patients might have a very different response from the same dose. And in the clinic, you don't really want that unpredictability. So we can remove the variability. And the second thing is that deuteration helps with brain penetration. It's about 40% more efficient in getting into the brain, which of course is where it works. And that should help us maybe potentially reduce the dosing, which could help with side effects.
Right. Yeah. So those are positive things going forward for the patient, but also, like you said, for access and getting the thing actually commercialized. It may be an easier sell for insurance coverages to know that, you know, shorter time, less cost. I mean, those are, I've never had to deal with an insurance company, but I'm assuming those items will all be positives going forward, trying to get this thing into market and paid for.
Yeah, I think very important. You know, when I think about what the paradigm shift is here with psychedelics, it's durability. You know, they work very quickly, which is great. And that's obviously an advantage over SSRIs, But the real advantage is the potential to give patients relief or remission from their symptoms for weeks or months at a time. Right? So that's the trade-off. And patients and healthcare providers will have to invest some time in psychotherapy and invest some time in the treatment sessions. But the trade-off is that months of benefit come from that. So it is this sort of pharmacoeconomic equation that we have to solve. And from what we're seeing, it's likely that we're not talking about one dose. It's likely to be at least a couple of doses based upon studies that we've seen. And the studies that use more than one dose are definitely more impressive in terms of their outcomes. Yeah. So if you've got treatments that last a whole day, then the second dose is another whole day. You know, it just starts to become very expensive with these long duration treatments. But the real goal, I think, is durability of effect. But this does the shorter treatment does help with, I think, the economics.
Yeah, definitely. Yesterday, there was some news. John Hopkins did a follow-up to their psilocybin study showing positive results up to a year out. That's going to have a nice spillover effect for your psilocybin program, I'm guessing?
I think it's really encouraging to see with two doses, the benefits really, really sustaining, you know, very consistent with the work that Alan Davis did. Where we saw about a 50 or so percent remission rate, and about a 70 odd percent effect size, which is encouraging. Our study that we're planning for the middle of this year will use two doses. That's the plan. They'll be 3 weeks apart, and we'll be able to track the benefits of both one dose and two doses in patients with MDD.
This would be for your phase one for 003.
Yeah, it's a phase 1-2 study, actually. So we'll measure from that PK and safety for sure to confirm what we've seen in our preclinical work. But we're also looking to see signs of efficacy and durability and the benefits of two doses versus one dose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Yeah, I look forward to it. I look forward to getting that. So this would be third quarter?
Yeah, so we're planning to file the IND in the second quarter. And which means we should get started with the study in the third quarter. Hopefully we'll have some early PK and safety data around the end of the year, at least some view from early cohorts with the efficacy readout coming in early 2023.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Okay, going down the line. So congratulations on the patent for 004. That's good news. Beefs up that product portfolio. You want to talk a little bit about 004?
Yeah, so obviously the patent is necessary, right? So if we're going to invest many millions of dollars in the program, you know, you want to have patent protection. So 004 is a deuterated version of DMT. I'm really excited about this molecule, actually. I think DMT has, I think, tremendous potential. It's very powerful. And puts people in a quite an amazing state, you know, really intense neuroplasticity, which we think could be quite powerful, and in with a shorter duration. But there are three main issues with DMT that I see. One is that it's very, very short. You know, a 10-minute ride or so is maybe not therapeutically useful, and likely why ayahuasca is used with DMT to extend the duration. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not orally bioavailable, so you can't take a tablet or a pill. You have to find some other way to deliver it, and you could do that IV, but that I think may have challenges too when you consider that the effects of DMT are almost instant. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a continuous infusion in someone's arm and they're in this state where they're not connected to reality at all and very quickly, then an IV infusion may be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And the third is that it's very long, very short acting, and so can create some anxiety. It's quite the rapid onset can be quite disorienting for mm-hmm. people. So we're addressing those things a couple of ways. First, we're deuterating the DMT, and what this is, it's substituting hydrogen atoms on the molecule with deuterium, which is heavy hydrogen, and essentially that has the effect of slowing the breakdown of DMT in the body by monoamine oxidase. So it's a smoother come down curve and a less aggressive spike. So that means a more pleasant experience for the patient. And what we're seeing in our animal models is a half-life for CYB4. That's 3 to 4 times that of DMT. So that means we have the ability to extend the duration to something longer, but still very manageable in the clinic. Yeah, so that's great. We're also combining CYB4 with an inhalation platform. This is more like a nebulizer platform. So that's a pre-approved one. That makes formulation very easy, but it's also less risky from an IV perspective, and maybe even a little calming for patients to have that mask on and to breathe a little bit, to breathe in the CYB4. So we plan to file a clinical trial application in Europe in the second quarter, and we're kicking off a pilot study in the third quarter, looking at that combination of CYB4 DMT with a propellant. So more details on that to come.
All right, very interesting. With a focus on potentially, is it anxiety disorders I saw on your website?
Yeah, that's right, anxiety disorders, which is obviously very broad. When you combine them all together, anxiety disorders impact 10 to 12% of the population. So it's a huge number of people. The largest conditions being generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety disorder. So those are the largest populations. And we'll determine as we get a bit closer to phase two studies what the precise indication will be.
Right. All very interesting. Keeping the indications broad in the early stages is probably a good idea until you can see the results. I think one criticism I heard of COMP360 and their results was perhaps it was too specifically focused on treatment-resistant depression, and maybe that needs some adjustments going forward. I don't know if you have any comments on that, on strategy in terms of clinical trials.
Yeah, and we're fortunate in a way to be somewhat behind Compass and their work, because we can learn from some of those things. And I do think there are some methodological learnings to take from the COMP360 study. We're certainly starting with CYB3 in MDD, in major depressive disorder. Plenty of evidence that psilocybin works in that condition. And when you're starting out with proof of concept, why pick the most difficult patients? It just doesn't seem to make sense as a starting point. So also much larger population to recruit from. Not I think recruitment is an issue at all in this space. Mm-hmm. Secondly, as I mentioned, we're looking at repeat dosing. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't do that, just because all the evidence points in that direction. So definitely repeat dosing. We're also planning to leave patients on their SSRIs. Just from a practical point of view, real world, that's what's going to happen. I can't see a physician taking weeks to titrate someone unnecessarily down off of their SSRIs and maybe go through some rebound issues just to give them a single session of psilocybin, then put them back on again. So practically, these are going to be adjunctive therapies, not monotherapies. And there's also evidence that the rebound effects of coming off of SSRIs can last for months, maybe a year. And so it's possible that some of that may have been happening in the COMP360 study.
That can negatively affect results?
Potentially. It's hard to say. I mean, we haven't seen the detailed data, only top-line data, but that's possible. So that is the risk. And just from a practical point, real world point of view, it just makes sense to leave patients on their SSRIs. And then the final thing is preparation. I think preparation is really important. Embark is designed to make sure that patients are very well prepared, so there are no surprises as they go into their treatment sessions. So we have some benefit of a little bit of hindsight and looking at that work that Compass has done.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So switching gears, you guys recently released your financial results and business highlights. So you guys seem to be in a pretty solid position. You've got cash in the bank. I guess maybe switching on to, the state of the market. We're in a pullback, an extended one. Comments on how that affects operations, how that affects you. You're in a pretty solid financial position, so you guys can wait it out. Maybe you don't need to raise cash right now, so this isn't really affecting you. Any comments on the state of the market and when the hell my stocks are going to go back up?
Yeah, it's a common, you know, topic of discussion, let's say that. Look, in around August of last year, we raised additional capital, not because we needed it, but because we had an opportunity to do that. And that's a lesson learned the hard way from by me over the years, that mm-hmm. you don't wait.
Take it while you can get it.
You want to have a strong balance sheet. I mean, mm-hmm. we know that further capital is going to be needed to bring these molecules all the way to market. It's just the way it is with drug development. So take it when you need it. You know, risks, your biggest risk, I think, is in drug development is time. You know, very often R&D takes longer and costs more than you might think. And sometimes things go wrong, you know, and so as long as you've got cash on the balance sheet, then you can ride out those things. And you can also ride out down markets if you're not desperate for cash. So I think we're in good shape there, as you say. The market itself, it's not just psychedelics. You know, when you look at the XBI, the biotech index, that's significantly down in the last few months as well. And it's just, in my view, largely institutions moving out of more speculative stocks. Yep. Like biotech stocks, there's been a fair amount of economic uncertainty. The Omicron wave towards the end of last year had people thinking, "Oh, here we go again. You know, how long is this going to last? So are people going to be on lockdown in a continued way? Is that going to affect supply chains?" And the answer is yes, and we just don't know how long for. It does appear that that's easing up a little bit. And hopefully we'll see, you know, some more economic stability, better supply chains, people back at work, certainly the job numbers look better. Yeah. And hopefully we can deal with inflation and interest rates. So that's a part of it. And then you've had the whole Russia-Ukraine situation leading to some political uncertainty as well. So mm-hmm. I think institutions have been a little bit on the sidelines, a bit jittery. And hopefully, as some of those things stabilize, we'll see them getting back into biotech stocks.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're someone trying to hedge for the future in an uncertain looking future, I guess it would make sense to pull your money out of something as speculative as a psychedelic industry, where it is right now. So that probably does make sense. And as more and more results come back and things stabilize and you guys start to pump up more positive clinical trials and things will come back.
Yeah, like I think as for the industry as a whole, when you look at the value of drug candidates or drug stocks, they improve dramatically or exponentially after phase two. So mm-hmm. as the whole sector starts to move into that phase, it'll reach a different sort of valuation point. And then you'll have a different type of investor. Early investors in biotech stocks are not necessarily investing in companies or molecules and wait for them to go all the way to market. That's hardly ever the case. They're investing because they know that there's an inflection point in value after phase two or before then. So they're short-term investors. I think mm-hmm. as the sector moves more towards phase two and there's more of that, certainty of approval, then you'll have a different type of investor, longer-term tech investors coming into the stock.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there's a whole gang of companies kind of on the cusp of phase two, only a few actually actively in advanced phase two trials. So yeah, there's a wave coming. Yeah, there's a wave coming. Okay. So anything else you'd like to cover, get out there, comment on, let people know about Cybin?
Yeah, just to say, this is a big year for us. Moving two molecules into human studies this year is a big deal. And we're also sponsoring two other investigator studies as well. And it's exciting. You know, typically it takes 3 to 6 years to bring a molecule from the bench to the clinic. And we're doing that with CYB3 in about 18 months, which is very rapid. Mm-hmm. So excited to be moving and getting the team to this point where we're making regulatory filings in the next quarter. We had great interaction with the MHRA recently in the UK. That's the UK's equivalent of the FDA. and very positive feedback from them on the work we're doing and the work we're planning to do. So yeah, I think this is just a strong, solid year of execution for us, and you know, great to have this strong team in place to get it done.
Sounds good. That made me think of something. You mentioned running your DMT early trials, perhaps in Europe. Is this a strategic decision based on regulatory environment, or is it staffing? You don't have to give all your secrets away, but there must be a reason.
It's a number of things like that: regulatory environment and openness, supply chain. Where can we get materials? And then also, where can we find clinical units that are licensed and experienced to run studies? So it's those three things come together. And we looked at a number of different jurisdictions, and I think we pretty much settled on one.
All right. Okay, thanks. That was informative. I appreciate it, Doug. And let's do this again when you guys have news. We'll let's check in later in the year.
Sounds good, Jason. And let's do it when I haven't got a cold. That'd be great too.
Yeah, let's do it. okay, get well, and we'll speak again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jason. All the best. Take care.
Thanks for joining the Psychedelic Insider Series, brought to you by Microdose and the Conscious Fund. Visit our website at www.microdose.buzz.